So, Monette Larsen, I think we have broken our own rules here, of which I don't apologise, because this is a show I'd love to hear our panel talk about. But we try to be very strict about the show has been up for a certain length of time, and at least a couple of weeks before we open, we have our discussion, and it remains open today and tomorrow. Unusually, this exhibition presents itself in three chapters. It's a small gallery, and it's an artist with a lot of work that they wanted to share with their public. So the show is in three parts. It has three chapters. And we have perhaps been able to see part one or part two. Part two opened last night. And so we're going to have to possibly reference pieces that are no longer up if you went to see the show today, or if you went and saw the show any time up till earlier this week. You may have missed part two, and we've all yet to see part three. So it's a sacrifice worth making to address this artist of a rather particular and unusual sensibility. Would you not agree, Marjorie?
One point of entry for me was that it reminded me of pedagogical exercises in both a good and bad sense, that someone who is fascinated by perspective systems of different sorts, some suitable for working drawings and others for, shall we say, what the cosmos might look like if made into a fiction, how the pedagogue becomes fascinated through the need to explain these things to her students, to pursue them as worlds, and then to make paintings, or at least in this case, I wouldn't call them paintings, but draftsmanship out of them. So I began thinking with the problem in a constructive way, I hope. Which of these are exercises and which of these are images or events?
Right. Yes. Another intriguing hybrid then of genre. Roberta, is the pedagogic the thing that is most striking to you about these works, or what sort of experience of them did you have?
Well, my thought about them was that in another decade we would have called them a form of regionalism.
Regionalism?
Yeah, that when I was first in the art world, there were a lot of artists that I think are really good that we used to call regional.
Right.
They were usually from Chicago or San Francisco, and they included Jim Nutt, Roy DeForest, Peter Saul, and there's a similar thing here where you feel that it's a little, I mean, I don't think she's up to the level of these artists, although I find it interesting to think about her and Nutt a little bit, and that there is a kind of rigidity to them, to her paintings, and the idea of a system or of a style that you just wish it would relax a little bit. I don't know, the idea that this person has just been making these, I don't know how long she's been actually making these paintings, because there were two that were sort of, toward the end, that were sort of like Dorothea Rockbirds, they were from the 90s. So I don't know how long this style has actually been in place. But I will say that I've seen both the shows, and the second show, which just opened last night, I felt was much better than the first one. Mm-hmm. And that they all had to do with, that the heads aren't as interesting as these different kinds of figural scenes. She's looking at Sienese painting, she's looking at cartoons, she's looking at Russian constructivism, and she's making this, it is a kind of world out of it. Mm-hmm. And I just found them very, I do think they're paintings. They are kind of carpentered in the way the surfaces alter from shape to shape, and sometimes they look like linoleum, and sometimes they get very brushy. And I don't know, I enjoyed them. I just thought, it's not big, but it's very distinct, and it has a kind of integrity, and it has a vision, and that's it achieves something that you want art to achieve. It's made by, it's one person making it, and saying what she wants to say.
Right, yeah. So, Ariella, with one response there that focuses on the intellectual inquiry and looks at the language from a point of view primarily of perspective, but then brings that into creating a fiction of the world. And then we've had another response that starts with the funkiness and eccentricity of the imagery, but then came round to where the first comment started with the idea of fictions, of building a world. What was your response to the show, and did it primarily have to do with form content?
When I first looked at them, I didn't see the first show. I only saw the second one. I didn't realize there were two different ones. When I first walked in, looking at them from a distance, or even in reproduction, you can't really get a sense of what they're like because they are so much about texture. And I had to take my glasses off and sort of look at them, you know, because there are these things that are pasted on that you can't see from a distance. They look much flatter in reproduction than they, and even, you know, when you have to stand sort of almost like this to kind of see them. And when you do, they kind of reveal themselves. I felt the way that there's like an ice cream sundae that's sort of brushed on, and then right next to it is something very hard-edged, and then there's a section that's really opaque, and then there's a section that's kind of transparent, and all of those things you don't see from far away. And the more you look at them and the more you sort of home in on them, the more I think they come alive.
Yeah. Well, those are three very different ways of looking at this one body of painting, and that to me is almost a vindication of their richness and complexity, that one person can come at them as cartoony, funky images, another person can think of them in terms of Renaissance perspective or fascination with perspective, and with a kind of almost mathematical... We got narrative, disegno, colorito in the three responses to that group of works. I feel now I'm on the spot to come up with a fourth way of reading them, but I will take the coward's route of offering a fusion of two that we've had already. And to me, that Roberta talked about regional painting in terms of not being of the New York moment. To me, they almost belong to a different century and yet are very current and relevant, it seemed to me, that they really do have the energy of Renaissance painting in that way of at one and the same time having the liberty to create a new world and being so open to really thorough investigation of methods that would actually make it real, make it a meaningful creation of a world. It seems to me that the levels of inquiry in these works are both art historical and, for want of a better word, mathematical. She's about extreme perspective and actually following through a logic of a bizarre extreme of perspective, but she's also about really looking at and thinking about Asian art and the whole different language of space, in particularly in Chinese and Japanese painting. So to me, these are heartfelt and intelligent in equal measure, in a degree that is rare in painting today. That's what I like about them, which is plenty, I think, to like about them. They are damn weird, though.
Well, the eyes, if you look at all the eyes, the different eyes that she does, they're all, each set is different. So they really are they're these kind of blocky figures, and then, and they kind of all look alike, but then the eyes are all different. Sometimes they're cut out, and sometimes they're
there's a similar kind of variety of body language in a way that you don't quite think is where they just differentiate themselves. I found them really interesting, just the surfaces. The way she kind of folds space by these weird jumps in scale, which is what I guess you must mean by the Chinese.
Yes. In that one in the latest show about the mall event, where you have a weird, almost alienating kind of mottled black and white textured rectangle, and it's almost like trying to get your focus right on the Richter. With the, in this case, you can't decide whether it is in plane or relief. You can't decide whether it's a space that's below that parapet or whether it's actually part of the parapet.
There's a figure standing there. Everything seems to be going on the diagonal. There's a figure standing there, and then there's another figure here who is in a completely different space and actually seems to be standing on the frame of the painting.
Yes.
Like, it's very peculiar.
And also, like Renaissance painting, we have a strangely alienated perspective on Renaissance painting because it's way back in the past, so it feels beautifully old and mystical, and we think of but we still can sense when we look at it the explosive revolutionary energy that this is coming. This is a break from centuries of Byzantine and medieval art, and this is art that's empowered to describe empirically and to find a logic to do so.
Yeah, but I think I said Sienese.
Yes.
But I think that there's a very strong abstract component. I think that Renaissance is too big a term because she's not involved with illusion. I mean, she is involved with perspective, but I think more than one point.
She's manipulating at least three kinds of perspectives, though not in every work. Parallel perspective of some variety or other, whether it's orthogonal or some sort of pictorial version of that, which is particularly amenable to working drawings in which you have to see everything, whether or not the work coheres in other respects, and reverse perspective, which she sometimes flips, so that in some of the works, you're looking up from under, in combination with a margin that may be in parallel perspective. And then in some of the works, I believe working best, from my point of view, is that very forgiving atmospheric perspective. Which we all are grateful for because that's dream time. It allows the amalgamation of different narratives and different rates of change from the historical to the mythological within a work. And who doesn't need that, I'd like to know. So the one that has to do with Poussin, I think, was one of the ones that wasn't perfect. It was a little awkward, but it worked. It worked like... and now I'm going to forget the filmmaker's name. It's too bad. It's Bresson, I think, who redid some of the medieval folk tales in film by showing flats, but with real horses, with actors riding on a real horse in front of flats. I was thinking, as I was looking at the work, maybe she should make more direct use of simple overlap.
Right.
To explain the inexplicable, rather than, as you were indicating, there's a certain kind of doggedness, which is very touching, but it reduces rather than augments some of her work, to my view, in which the scheme is worked out even through the bodies, such that the thing becomes an incident or an anecdote rather than an event of dream time or something. And I was thinking to myself, maybe she could somehow fudge as she was willing to do in some others, by bringing in some of these other perspectival things and relieve her of the pressure to make everything conform in certain ways.
Maybe.
I found my response a bit like very clever music, where the experts tell you that the composer's doing X, Y, or Z, or if it's a piece of avant-garde music, the program notes tell you that that he or she followed this strategy and subjected the work to this these rules. And I'm looking at them, I listen to the music, I don't know anything about those rules, I just like the music. And sometimes with these works, the perspective, it's way above my head. I mean, I've never learned to draw correctly, so to have to actually master those ideas of perspective. And I always kind of fell asleep when we were being taught about perspective in the Renaissance. So, and yet I just look at the images and like them, but I like the energy that's in them that could only be there because she's subjecting them to these kind of rules. Ariella, I was moved by your description of the tactile, up-close surface. Does that mean that perhaps, like me, you're not quite with the perspectives or the games being played with perspective?
No, I wasn't that. I also, like you, I don't know the rules and I didn't know what she was doing exactly. But I was more, apart from the surface, I was sort of caught up in the play between perspectival space and the flatness of Russian constructivism, and how she kind of was playing between these two forms of these two sort of abstractions, one of which is sort of in deep space and one of which is totally flat, and kind of going back and forth between those things. And I had sort of the voice of Greenberg in my head. I don't know why he was there, saying, you know, she hasn't broken her ties with Cubism, you know, she hasn't, you know, she's not sufficiently abstract. Like, I he was sort of there in my kind of hectoring me while I was in the show, and I did sort of feel like there was something unresolved about her relationship to abstraction and her, you know, and yet it was totally eccentric and funky. I like that word because I think that's...
She is somebody who was completely abstract and who then surprised herself until I believe the mid-90s, maybe.
Oh, so this is kind of new.
Newish, yes. I think this is actually... Her dealers in the audience, so he might, during question time, clarify that for us. But yeah, this is somebody whose interest in illusion is abstract. So I think picked up the right vibes from the work. Let's now think about our last exhibition, sculptor Diana Al-Hadid, and as I've called on one panelist to launch us with each show, I think it's my turn. So otherwise they will complain that they had to do two rather than everyone else had to do one. This is a sculptor I followed from the get-go. I actually met her when she was a student at Skowhegan and have been incredibly impressed by pretty much everything she does. I think sculpture is a medium in many ways in more trouble than painting or any other medium in today's world. We seem to have lost there are great sculptors around for sure, but somehow painting has this energy to it, this the tradition, this ongoingness that's no number of people pronouncing that the painting is dead seems to get through, the message doesn't seem to get through to painters. Whereas, ironically, with sculpture being kind of venerated above painting at a certain moment, and at least the idea of the specific object and sculpture having an expanded field, in a funny way, the old craft traditions of modeling, of carving, and one could add to it, welding, a recent addition, and producing an object. This is something that's, I think, Of course, we can all come up with a dozen or so people we love who are still doing it, but somehow it seems to me a fraught activity or an endangered species. And so it's always for me incredibly refreshing to see somebody coming at sculpture with a new energy. That said, I now find myself dug into a hole where I realize that much as I love these works in many ways and find them impressive and intriguing, my actual response is somewhat mired in wondering how sculptural these actually really are. There seems to be a lot of incredibly close craft work in them. There seems to me a lot of local decisions that are moving and interesting. It seems to me that they excite emotion. The dilemma I have is as to whether this is an environment that has sculptural qualities or whether these are objects in the round that have a compelling unity about them. But general overall impression, a big, big two thumbs up. I know I'm the moderator, but somebody can jump in. Don't have to wait for an invitation. Who cares to agree, disagree, move on, give their response?
I think I'll jump in with something you said. I actually think these works flaunt anything but sculpture. I think they're very pictorial and on purpose, but with problems. That is to say, though they exist in actuality in our space, they're made up of lines and planes in such a way as to deny the Western, and this is the hot link here, the Western conception of what a sculpture is, namely that it's either volumetric and acknowledges that as such, or massive. This is fussy and complicated. It's a kind of confection of pictorial tendencies. But this is where, for me, what starts as supreme disappointment gets at least theoretically interesting. I don't see these as paintings, even scenographically derived. I see this as, yes, conceptually tutored in such a way as to start with the, if not the Syrian, then the Islamic proposition that space is defined by courtyards and screens. And I actually think that that's, if her pieces, which are not so successful, have any integrity, it's by starting from that position, that what is space is essentially a courtyard and walls that are penetrated owing to the need for ventilation. And I don't mean that these works are to be seen as architecture. I mean those are the, shall we say, the structural propositions on one side, and then postmodernism on the other, in a kind of meltdown, literally, that I think she's weak at. But I think that when I saw the work, I thought that was what she was attempting, or the work was attempting. I don't know if I've made myself clear at all.
I think you've certainly been very rich and suggestive in those comments. Roberta, does Marjorie's interpretation make sense here of your experience?
It makes sense of her experience.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Doesn't make sense to
start
at all. I found the show almost without redeeming qualities. I do think it's better than her previous show because she stopped using recognizable buildings and tilting them around and doing different things. But basically, I found confection is a good word. My word would have been pastiche. That this work is a pastiche of 70s process art. And it's very easy to unpack a lot of constituent elements and received ideas. And starting with Linda Benglis, the paintings of Larry Poons, for example. Does anybody remember an artist named Lauren Sold who used to pour milk and eggs and food coloring across the floor at 303. Well, if you imagine kind of trying to get that idea up off the floor, as Richard Serra did to Carl Andre, you have, I mean, how my most, you know, and then, and all else fails, throw in a nude or two, you know, which it just seemed completely contradictory and felt like, you know, she's still a young artist and she has a really kind of an interesting feeling for materials, but I felt that she really needed to go back to the drawing board and kind of start again. You know, there were different parts. The reason I mentioned Lauren Zold, because there are actually a lot of puddles in those, a lot of plaster puddles that have been elevated. And I thought about, I mean, Courtyards and Screens was interesting. I thought about fountains, you know. And then there were these really, you know, there was like fabric in there, kind of crumpled, and tinfoil. And and you sort of wanted to just take it all apart and say, you know, you've got about 8 different sculptures in here. Like, what's the most important? What's really most important to you? Because it's not clear. And how they could ever survive. I mean, I can't imagine being able to own one. I mean, how are they even going to get out of there intact or in a way that could be reassembled? It just, I don't know.
Why is that a problem? Who cares? We're there to see the show. It's the show that's under review. It's a functional commercial problem for someone else to worry about how you get
it. I don't know.
Out.
It's something I think about because I'm interested in art being owned.
Right.
I'm interested in...
But I feel I own it.
I'm tired
there,
of these shows that are just like public events. You know, you walk in, you see an event, and you walk out. And it's... unless you're a billionaire, and, you know, like that's with the Richters, unless you're a billionaire and you have the most enormous house in Moscow or London or whatever, who's got a wall to put those on? And similarly, unless you have a certain kind of maintenance staff, who can...
These seem to be very tangential, almost slightly bourgeois questions. Who cares? We've got a show up at the moment.
Well,
we can go in, as long as Marianne Boesky is open, you can go in for free in a beautifully lit gallery and have a total aesthetic experience. You can stay from 10 in the morning till 6 at night and have aesthetic experience for...
David,
four
you have
weeks.
Not looked at enough art in New York to
so,
like this.
So
word.
Why does it matter who owns it at the end of it?
You have not looked at enough art. These works are completely derivative. You just can't.
No, but that,
I
no,
won't
there's,
let
there's,
you get
there's,
away
there's,
with
there's two
this kind
here.
Of admiration
no,
you
no,
have
no.
for them because it makes you sound ignorant. It really does.
Ignorance is bliss, perhaps. But I'm taking issue with the second point made, which I don't want to dwell in too much because it seems so minor.
I'm interested.
Who cares about who owns
well,
it?
I have actually hit on a pet peeve that goes beyond this panel and beyond that show, which is just the role of spectacle in art right now, and that people are putting on shows.
Yes.
They're not actually making art. Mm-hmm. They're putting on shows.
Well, they're making art, which is spectacular.
Well,
this is. I agree with
and
you.
And the idea that
it is theatrical.
The idea that you could, I really think making small paintings is one of the most radical things you can do right now. The idea that you could walk into a gallery, buy a painting, get in a cab with it and take it back to your small apartment. It seems incredibly refreshing. And I'm just kind of...
Okay.
You know, it's just because it kind of would go counter to all the trends right now where... I mean, just think about what's on view in Soho in Chelsea right now. So many enormous things. And these aren't even that enormous. I'm just... Look,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm cranky. But
no,
anyway,
no. We should have a panel just on that topic, but it would, I think, perhaps be a little unfair to Al Hadid to make give
right,
her
but
the
I
burden.
Do,
of,
I don't
of
think
what
it's bourgeois for me to think about how these could be reconstructed and exactly what their lifespan is. You know, I mean,
if you took a painting, say by a small painting by Richter or Mernette Larsen, home with you, and you put it on your mantelpiece. You'd for the first week or two, you'd look at it for quite a bit. But the truth of the matter is, and you know, we all own pictures, and the truth of the matter is that it could just settle into the wallpaper at a certain point. I mean, you then.
Look, I retract my statement. Okay, you don't have to address it.
All right. Okay. Good. Right. But anyway, Okay, dealing then, perhaps. Okay, Ariella, did you find that this was a show of objects that you coveted or a spectacle that you savored or didn't?
I didn't savor it. I agree with Roberta. I mean, I really didn't like it, and I didn't get into the... I couldn't even get into the mindset of it. I just thought they were really ugly, and I thought the tinfoil was tacky, and I thought they looked like my grandmother's Rococo, like Dresden lamp or something, like poor, you know. I don't have much of depth to say about them. But I do agree with everything Roberta said. So.
I think there's something there. But it needs to be taken apart and really examined piece by piece. And it's just a lot of different things sort of stuck together.
Oh, I do have one thing I want to say, Sean.
Yes.
I was thinking about them. They did make me think a little bit, because I was thinking, why does she have to prop them up with all of these references? Like the lot, was it Lot Pontormo? And, you know, this, and she took this thing from the cape of some anonymous Prado painting. Like, the whole logic of it made no sense to me. It just seemed like, oh, I need to be taken seriously, so I need to invoke some kind of art historical past, because otherwise people are going to look at these and think, you know, what the hell is this? So I've got to use, you know, I've got to reference antecedents, and I just thought that was weak. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, she's reading out of a playbook. That's my problem with the show. It's very scripted, a certain kind of postmodernism. There are better examples of it, which may be as irritating, but they're clearer. I want to put in a plug for at least some work by Osvaldo Romberg. Now that I've said that, I'll move back to this, in which citation, surfaces of citation, that is to say mere mentions rather than investigations, are very much part of a certain kind of postmodern idiom. I found the vocabulary very familiar. What I had started to say was only by my way of thinking, why is she putting, she who can be, if anything, piss elegant in other respects, in other shows, why is this such a mess? And I was trying to get a vantage on that, and that's why I found to my satisfaction, not the show, but the cultural vantage from Islamic art, that which lightens, because it penetrates the wall, it lightens material and makes it available for spiritual engagement. That's a proposition in Islamic art. And I was thinking, what if she actually worked with the wall, just the wall? Or just some screens. And I actually was imagining how I would give her a studio crit, which will never happen, obviously, in which I would redo the piece in line with certain intentions concerning Islamic art.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is theatrical. I don't actually, however, accept Michael Fried's dichotomy that one has to choose between theatricality and absorption, and that somehow one will encapsulate all that's wholesome and good about art, and the other is it would encapsulate all that's gone wrong with art. Look, these are not things that you're going to take home with you in a taxi. These do have some sort of makeshift dimension to them. They do have a bit of the fun fair going on in them. I don't accept this logic that somehow an artist who makes process art doing one very particular process, like pouring liquid on the ground, has a monopoly or puts his or her mark on that process for all time henceforth, and any other artist who pours is referencing Linda Benglis or something. I think that's a very reductive formalism.
Well, I think that one of the things you do when you look at any art is you think about, you're sort of stuck with what pops up in your mind. What I found, for me, my experience was that I don't think anybody owns anything, but you have to do more with it that's convincing. It's clear she's trying to do something more with it. She's trying to make it vertical or screen-like or whatever else. But I just think that there were too many disparate parts and too many disparate sculptural ideas that I had seen, whether or not anybody owns them, I had seen them expressed more directly and more convincingly elsewhere.
It seems to
and
me,
it
be, yeah.
And it came to seem extremely contrived, like she's got a lot of ideas and they haven't been sorted out. Like, it would be really interesting just to go in there physically and, like I said, take those works apart. Mm-hmm. Some of the details, some of the way she's using plaster and color, you know, they have all kinds of possibilities.
Right.
But they're just, it's just not, I mean...
For me, that's why I brought up at the first saying I didn't think they were, even though they were sculptural, they were not sculpture. And that's, I don't have a problem with them being temporary, funfairish, and overloaded, because that, to me, is their aesthetic. And I think the thing that you said that I like most is that they reminded you of fountains. Great. We don't get fountains. We don't get gates. There are great objects out in the world that were once low-key for great sculptural inventions. So it seems to me that if somebody is making environments or installations or objects that do invoke those traditions, that's a plus. But I did have lots of caveats about local decisions, which I'm not going to now rehearse because it'll be, you know, I need to stick behind this work.
Okay,
well, let's have some response briefly to the two shows. Let's start with Monette Larsen. Let's take our minds back to the paintings of Monette Larsen. We'll do like 3 minutes on each. Larsen, anybody want to say something about Larsen? It would be lovely to hear some comments on that show, if that's felt. Yes, thank you.
Color, but I think her use, Monette Larsen's use of color is very distinctive and very special. And as for, just back to the Richter for a moment, I thought one of the hardest shows in many years was the drawing show at the drawing center of his drawings.
Great. Okay. Monette Larsen's color. Any more on perspective, on her being a regional artist, on her channeling the Renaissance, either in subject or in the desire to create a world, on her funkiness? Anybody wanting to offer a dissenting note? Monette Larsen, going, gone? Yes.
What is your reference to the Renaissance with regard to her work? I don't see it at all.
Okay, I just felt the Renaissance derives its energy from a willingness and a desire to create a picture of the world or the universe rather than to follow an accepted pattern. But at the same time, the Renaissance was... This is a 101 sort of reduction of the Renaissance, but it's. But at the same time as that... individualism and renewal, there's also an empiricism, a desire to use particular systems to say what if, or to explore a certain logic. So that was one kind of Renaissance-ism at play in her work, to my eye. Anybody else on Larsen? And so then, how does the audience respond to this somewhat heated debate then on, well, not a debate, this three against one on Diana al-Hadid. Do we have? Do you want someone want to make it four, five, or six against one, or is there somebody who wants to put in a word for this work? Yes. Sir.
Not 4-1, I'm afraid. But when you come into the gallery and you see the, I think it's called the Great Divide. Is that the wall piece? Mm-hmm. And I think that illustrates it very well.
Because when you approach it, it seems, I always thought it was very mysterious. It was a grate, a screen. Is it melting? Is it aged? What's going on? And then you go around the wall, and you see the figures and the dripping paint, and it's head-smacking to me. Just turns into an illustration. It turns into surrealism of a very kind of sentimental sort. And she was constantly kind of tripping herself up in that way, but that was very kind of, you know, a set piece for me. Mm-hmm. And just to address what you said, Ms. Budik, if you went to Documento last summer, not all the artists, not just a few, but all the artists had this backstory. Not just one level backstory, but like the French say, like centième degré, like three levels of backstory, to the point where when the pieces are manifested visually, they almost can't transform anymore. They're so overdetermined. And I think that's a template for a lot of international art right now.
Okay. Yes, lady. Yes.
When I said I thought about weight and those things are so big and massive, and because of the way she's been stripping, the way they were constructed, they felt light because you could see through it, you could feel the air. And I agree with Marjorie about that, and some sort of spirituality and a dreamlike sensation to the whole scene.
I think that was her intention. I don't know whether she pulled it off, but I think that was her intention.
That was what I like.
To Larson, Manette Larson.
Yes.
Aha, right. Yes. I buy that. Thank you very much. Thank you. Anybody like to make another comment on Diana al-Hadid's show? Yes, towards the back on the left, please. Sorry, use the mic, because
I was struck by the drawings, and I noticed that no one mentioned them, and I thought maybe you'd comment on them.
You mentioned them. Come on.
I thought they had quite a presence, and they were quite impressive with the graphite and the I think it's pastel or something. But.
Right, right. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yes, a lady towards the front here on the right aisle.
It's really a question and a statement at the same time. When fashion borrows from art, it gets substance. It gives it substance. When art borrows from fashion, we're looking at fabrics. And I don't know if it's because fashion is sort of always looking backwards. There hasn't been a new fabric since polar fleece, and fashion has sort of not gotten on the whole technological bandwagon. So it's always reinventing stuff and not looking fresh. So I think when artists dip their brush into the fashion pot, we don't get excitement. Roberta, what do you think?
That's.
I don't agree, but I sort of agree with what you're saying generally in a certain way, but I just. It's too much of a generalization for me. It sounds good.
It sounds good. Yes.
Because I really think anything is possible. Any artist can make any medium convincing. That's what artists do. And you can't just diagram that this is going to work and that's not going to work. Do you know? Because as soon as you say that, somebody's going to come along and prove you wrong.
Let's say it, so they can prove us wrong. Okay. Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
I'd just like to publicly apologize to David for the word ignorant. That was a little overboard. Okay? So.
Wow, I got the apology from Roberta Smith. Line one of my resume. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Roberta. I didn't take any offense.